All right, part two. Here we go. So, the TSM protocol, right? Or really, I guess it should be the Truth Social protocol, right? Because there's going to be the Truth Social protocol. There's going to be the Truth Social client, which is going to play a part in validating parts of the Truth Social protocol for various parties, and is going to interact with the cloud chain layer. So here's a key distinction, right? Touching back on our first topic of the cloud chain and its role in blind attestation. There is going to be software which integrates and interacts with and parses and queries the cloud chain, right? And is aware of the cloud chain or your cloud chain, if you're a root, right? But what I was pointing out is that the cloud chain will not be aware of the software, okay? The Truth Social client will be aware of the cloud chain, but the cloud chain will not be aware of the Truth Social client. Picking up what I'm putting down? It's a one-way motherfucking function up in this bitch. Now, the Truth Social client will be used by some in order to validate whether or not you have a valid identity block or reference for certain parties, right? Because you could see how certain directories with their own layers above, right, might need something to be considered a valid reference in order to do certain things within that directory. Certainly if there's anything that depends upon needing to rely on a valid time, right, you're going to want to be sure that you're interacting with a valid reference. And things like, well, downloading software in the Get Truth directory, you're going to want to make sure you have a valid hash or checksum, right? And the reference descriptors are going to play a part in that, describing which line has a file name, a file hash, validating that it's the correct file. Things like this are going to be layers above the TSN protocol, but will be a part of what the TSN or the Truth Social client will be capable of. So it will interact with the cloud chain. You know, it's going to be aware of the cloud chain. It's going to be aware of other clients, right? And so in totality, that will make up the Truth Social network, is these various Truth Social clients and those who interact with them, right? So we got cloud chains, we've got the Truth Social protocol, and we've got the Truth Social client. And then the Truth Social network, which comprises all of these things, together, right? Interacting with each other. But we're not going to go in deep on this one with regard to that, because this is about the Truth Social Protocol, which is how you determine whether or not an identity block or a TSN reference is valid. So let's start with an identity block, right? In order to have a valid identity block, it's going to need to have a valid identity block header, and at a minimum, a valid clout-based reference. It certainly can have numerous TSN references, but it needs to have at least one clout-based reference, a valid clout-based reference. So I think the order of operations here is going to be to first explain what comprises a valid TSN reference, and then explain what makes a valid clout-based reference, because it's a particular type of TSN reference which has some additional requirements, right? And then we'll talk about what makes a valid identity block header. But first, I just want to touch on the idea that one of the goals of this protocol is basically to ensure that content creators are producing identity blocks as frequent as they are producing content or creating content, right? Because identity blocks are kind of the production of them is kind of like the heartbeat of the system, right? And without them, you don't have reliable time within references, right? So in order to ensure that the heart keeps beating, right, you got to have some rules that force content creators to use their clout chain for what it's supposed to be used for, which is to provide this blind attestation for identity blocks. So that was basically one of the major goals of, the major goals of this protocol is to ensure that content creators are creating these existence proofs, because that's what the clout chain is really providing, to provide that contrast for the occurrence proofs that are within references, right, which are within blocks, right? So as long as you've achieved this goal of ensuring that that identity blocks are published as frequent as content is published, then you're providing this constant alternation between existence proofs and occurrence proofs, which provides reliable PB pop, right? So that's just something to keep in mind, right? That's part of the main goal of this protocol. And all right, so let's jump into what makes a valid TSN reference, right? Which touches on some of the other goals, right? You want to know provably who is making the content, right? So this goes into the idea of digital signatures from root, if that's the perspective we are talking about. And in order to be a reference, you know, it's gonna need to be from root if we're talking about that type of cloud chain, right? Because a server feed may be a different type, which actually allows references from non-root entities within their blocks. I sort of hinted at that in the last one. But this one's going to be about from the perspective of root and like a, we'll call it a root cloud chain as opposed to or a root identity blockchain, right? As opposed to server feed identity blockchain, right? So obviously one of the other goals is the who. So in order to have a valid TSN reference, you're going to need to have what in the early days we were calling 3 out of 3 signing. So 1 out of 3 as or 3 of 3 aspects of signing. So the first aspect is that you have a valid digital signature of the message that is being signed, because references are really at their core just messages, right, of text. So the first aspect of signing is a valid digital signature from the person it's supposed to be, which is root. The second aspect of a valid TSN reference is that, well, it must be included in a valid identity block. And the way in which you could tell, in addition to actually literally being present in that block, it needs to be represented in the identity block header within the identity block header's Merkle root, okay? So every TSN reference, which we're going to get to further, I'll just touch on it now, needs to have a reference ID, which serves as is made by taking a hash of the digital signature of the message, right? And by creating a reference ID, you can then create a Merkle tree of all references, reference IDs, references, whatever you want to think, however you want to think of it, within an identity block. And so the Merkle root is one part of the identity block header, which we're going to get to a little later, right? And so the second aspect of signing is that a reference must be included within a valid identity block. And anything within a valid identity block must be in the identity block's header within the Merkle root, right? Now, the third aspect of signing is basically that you would need to have a signature page URL where the reference is published from what we were calling a valid account early in the days. Now, proving that you made this signature page from the perspective of posterity is going to be a tricky situation, which is part of why I say that it's 85% finished, the TSN protocol. And I have some ideas about how to address this motherfucker. But put that in your pocket for now and just, you know, take for granted that there are these three aspects of signing. For now, consider that you certainly are going to need at least those first two out of the three in order to be a valid reference. And by the way, providing that third aspect for those in real time is easy, right? Because you just, if it has a page, how else would you be viewing it? I mean, I guess you could be viewing it from the identity blockchain itself, but most of the time you're going to be viewing content within the pages themselves. It's like on Twitter, if you click on a tweet, it goes to a separate URL, right? So there's three aspects of signing, right, for a valid reference. Just put that third aspect in your pocket for now, right? So in addition to these three aspects of signing, a TSN reference is going to have a valid timestamp. So this is where everything we talked about in the first part of this lecture comes into play. But before we dive into the timestamp, right, because this is going to be a complex topic in and of itself, the timestamp. But before we get into that, and since I briefly touched on the fact that it needs to have a valid, it needs to have a reference ID, right, I'll just add that the reason the reference ID is a hash of the signature is this. Or let me back up for a second, right? In reality, when you take a digital signature of a message, right, what the software is really doing is it's taking a hash of the message, okay, or it's producing a hash of the message, and then it's providing a digital signature of the hash of the message, okay? So one way this could have been done, providing, making a reference ID, right, would be, and by the way, right, it, essentially the reference ID was the signature before we implemented this, but you can't really make a Merkle tree out of a base 58 or base 64 signature, right? Or it's much more efficient and better to use hashes, right? Because the Merkle tree is itself a tree of hashes. So you want the root, the branch, the, you want the branches to be hashes, right? So anyway, before we had this Merkle tree within the header, essentially the signature was the reference ID, and as such, if you were, you know, referencing little r, the action referencing, right, if you were referencing someone else's content, you would do it by using the signature of that content, right? The signature was serving as the ID or the fingerprint, okay? So as opposed to now, you have a hash of the signature, which is going to serve as the reference ID. And so what I was getting into was, well, technically the signature itself is signing a hash of a message, as opposed to signing the message itself, right? So one way this could have been done would be to use the hash of the message, which is being signed, as the reference ID, okay? But instead, we're using the hash of the signature. And there's a reason for that, okay? Part of the reason, right, is because a hash is a deterministic algorithm, right? If you take a hash of the word hello, you're going to get a result, digest? I think a digest. You're going to get a digest, right? The output. You're going to get a fixed output. And anyone who ever takes a hash of the word hello is going to get the same output. And that's what it's supposed to do, right? But so, in the context of using a hash as a reference ID, you want to make sure, obviously, that the motherfucker's unique. So, what they were talking about in regards to one person making two of the same having a collision in reference IDs, or separate people having a collision, right? If you want to call it that. You need to make sure that the input is unique, right? Because if two people or one person can have the same message as the input, then your motherfucking unique identifier ain't unique. You're gonna have a collision, right? And the actuallys may not like that terminology, or they may, I don't know, but I don't care. You get what I'm, you're picking up what I'm putting down. I guess they would probably say, well, actually, a collision is, you know, when two different inputs form the same output, which would only happen if you had a bad algorithm. So the way to define the motherfucking algorithm is, or the way to tell if it's a good algorithm is if it's collision resistant, right? But you get the motherfucking sense that this motherfucker's laying out. Alright? So, the unique identifier has got to be unique. And in reality, the chances of getting the same message are pretty damn small. In the sense that, due to the fact that you have these timestamps within the message itself, it almost provides a form of padding the motherfucker. Well, the actuallys might say padding is probably supposed to represent randomness, okay? But, or entropy, right? But they do provide a degree of iteration in input, but technically it is within the realm of possibility that you could also, you could have the same message, you know, the other data is the same, and you have, you're making the message at the same time as someone else. So they use the same Bitcoin and Litecoin occurrence proof, and we're going to get into the motherfucking timestamp, all right? And you happen to do it at the same second as them, so you had the same human timestamp, we're going to get into that, and you produced the same exact message. So then you, in that scenario, you would have the same message hash that is being signed. Now, this didn't matter when the actual digital signature was being used as the unique identifier, which it was before this, but now we have Merkle trees, so it needs to be a hash, and due to the reasons I just described, it's a hash of the digital signature as opposed to the hash, which is the input to the digital signature, right? Another reason would be you want to ensure that a digital signature is being created in the first place, but that's a different story, right? You know, you could kind of see if the hash of the message itself was used, someone could potentially be referencing, or someone could potentially be creating these references without digital signatures, but in reality, this is all going to be software, guys. It's all going to be software. Anyway, the point is your TSN reference needs a reference ID, and that reference ID is a hash of the digital signature. Moving on. The last part of creating a valid, or the last requirement of creating a valid reference, is a valid timestamp. Now, here's where everything from the first part of this comes into play, and if you want to understand it, you're going to have to pay close attention. And here's where I also issue a correction from what I just said 2 minutes ago, where I talked about the Bitcoin-Litecoin occurrence proof within the timestamp, because technically, not technically, like definitely, the occurrence proof is going to be a cloud chain timestamp going forward. But since the cloud chain doesn't exist yet, the temporary part of this was using Bitcoin and Litecoin. But that Bitcoin and Litecoin do come into this play in different aspects of the system, right? Namely the headers, but we'll get to that. In order to create a valid TSN reference, you're going to need to have a valid timestamp. There are two components to a valid timestamp. One of them is your own timestamp in human time, okay? And the other one is a cloud chain timestamp, a cloud chain occurrence proof, right? So two components, cloud chain timestamp, human timestamp. Each of these has their own requirements, right? So we spoke about in the first part how these different types of time or timestamps were applied, and there are two different types of proofs, right? You've got your recency proofs, greater than or less, or more recent or less recent. But if you're talking about epoch time, you're saying, you know, greater than the number of seconds here or less than the number of seconds here, right? Comparing the number of seconds in X with the number of seconds in Y, right? So those are your recency proofs. And then you have your proximity proofs, which are a bit different. In terms of these two components of a valid timestamp in a TSN reference, the cloud chain occurrence proof component is going to have to be a valid occurrence proof, as in you could go to that block height in the cloud chain and check the timestamp and it will be equal, right? And it's going to have to meet a proximity rule proof. So the cloud chain occurrence proof is going to have to meet one proximity rule proof. And the other component, the human timestamp component, is going to have to meet two different recency rule proofs. Now let's go into some of these proofs, all right? First, let's start with the proximity rule proof and how it applies to the cloud chain occurrence proof component of the timestamp. Well, first, before we get into that, I want you to grasp a concept which describes exactly how these proofs should be evaluated, right? I want you to think of, you know, let's do it for instance, an identity block which has, you know, four references. So one would have to be the cloud-based reference. Then you have three references, right? Three other general references. And then you have the header. So what I want you to do is think of them as sort of like a blockchain with a height where the cloud-based reference represents the bottom of this stack, right? And then you have the reference, or the, you know, the least recent item in the stack. And then you have all the references going up in between until you get to the header, which it would be the top of the stack and which would represent the most recent item, okay? And all of the references in between are basically stacked according to their cloud chain occurrence proof block height, right? So you have least recent in time going to most recent in time, starting from cloud base reference going all the way up to the header. And it looks like we'll continue this in part number 3. I'll see you then.